Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report Tax Day. Ordinarily, Tax Day, April 15th, 2020. Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. You know, as we scan the headlines and what's important today, I wonder how many people are aware of the overreach by the left, the Democratic, no, the communist left. The communist Democrats have introduced massive gun control legislation while everyone is looking at this coronavirus, the communist Chinese party virus. You know, since the CDC confirmed the first case of coronavirus on the 21st of January here in the United States, the communist left have introduced both a House and a Senate version of a new massive anti-Second Amendment bill. Now, it's called Gun Violence Prevention and Community Safety Act of 2020. And of course, the guy behind this, the sponsor behind this, Hank Johnson, Congressman Hank Johnson. And of course, on the Senate side, oh, you know who, Elizabeth Warren. They've introduced these bills. Now, they've not gotten a whole lot of attention, folks, because of the fallout, and the attention given to the coronavirus. The bill on the congressional side was introduced by Hank Johnson from Georgia on January 30th. Now, I mentioned this. One of the programs I mentioned this. And this was the text was referred to the House Subcommittee on Crime, Terrorism, and Homeland Security. And that was done last month, March 10th. It was referred to that committee. And this bill seeks to impose a federal semi-automatic assault weapons ban. Somebody please tell me the definition of an assault weapon. I'm asking that rhetorically. Now, the bill says, in part, it shall be unlawful for a person to import, sell, manufacture, transfer, possess, or affecting interstate or foreign commerce, a semi-automatic assault weapon. Now, I understand what a semi-automatic is. I understand what a weapon is. Could be a baseball bat. It could be a tire iron, right? In this case, it would be a gun.
Or grandma's frying pan.
You know something? You sound like you speak from experience.
That's one of the best, that cast iron one.
I'm telling you, that'll leave a mark, won't it? Ban grandma's cast iron. Eric the Tech, I'm telling you, man. You got to come on with me. This is great.
I am on with you.
I mean, on camera. Oh man, you're never gonna
just giving you a hard time.
You're never gonna come on, are you? You're
continue.
Oh, come on. All right. So anyway, you know the where was I now? I don't remember. Going through this, this bill is pretty massive. The sections of this bill. Title 1, firearm licensing. Title 2, background check reform. Title 3, firearm possession. Title 4, extreme risk protection orders. 5, assault weapons and firearm silencers and mufflers ban. Look, I like silencers. I do. It's not like in the movies. It's good to protect your hearing, by the way. In Title 6 is firearm trafficking. 7, dealer reform. 8, industry reform. 9, research and community violence intervention program. Folks, you can read this. And then the Senate version of the bill, or the Senate version, Gun Violence Prevention and Community Safety Act of 2020. Elizabeth Warren is the sponsor of this bill. And, of course, that was introduced on February 5th of this year, and it's been referred to the Senate Committee on Finance, as well it should. And the Senate bill has the same 10-section headings as I read. So that's an interesting little piece of information. I think it's important for people to understand, you know, while our attention is on to the Communist Chinese Party virus and the effects, stuff is taking place. Oh, hey, and you know, here's a great idea. Because this virus can really rip its way through prisons, I have this great idea. Eric the Tech, you know, let me run this idea by you, okay? Let's do this. Why don't we release, oh, I don't know, criminals from prison just so they don't get the virus? And we'll just kind of start with the people who aren't too bad.
I have an open bedroom at my house.
Do you? Okay. A guest room. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, guess what?
Got plenty of veggies stocked up, stuff like that. So, yeah.
Well, I guess we could talk about your grandma's frying pan, too. You might need it because a couple of things. One is ICE is to release, that's the Immigration Customs Enforcement, almost 700 foreign invaders to this country due to this Chi-Com virus panic. But even more interesting, it's inside, I suppose. Where is it? Where did I see this? A guy who was released from prison because of this, because we can't have him get the virus. He commits a murder the day after he's released. I wouldn't have expected that. Now, this happened in Florida. 26-year-old guy commits a murder a day after being released from prison. He was released early to help prevent the spread of the coronavirus. His name is Joseph Williams. He was arrested for possession of heroin and drug paraphernalia March 13th. Hillsborough County released, by the way, 164 what they termed low risk inmates on March 19th to help prevent the spread of the coronavirus among the jailers and staff and the people in there. Well, that was March 19th. March 20th, police get a call. They go to a house on Ash Avenue in Tampa. What do they find? A DB, as it's called. A dead body. Police arrested Williams for second-degree murder this past Monday. By the way, now, just so you don't think they're releasing the worst people, Williams had 35 charges on this rap sheet. 35, that's all. Including a conviction for burglary of an unoccupied conveyance back in 2012. Oh, yeah, and the felony possession of a firearm in 2018. But, you know, they're misunderstood. We certainly wouldn't want them to get sick from the virus, would we? Retail sales expectedly plunged by 8.7% since everything's been shut down. I'm surprised that number is so low. Go figure. There's a couple of other things here I wanted to hit before I bring on Dr. Richard Proctor. Richard Proctor from the Provost Institute joins me Wednesday. And I've got to tell you, he's an expert on the Constitution. If you look over my shoulder right there, he is the author of numerous books, including the Liberty Will It Survive series, available at provisinstitute.com. It's really good. His books are really good. Constitution, Saving the Constitution, one of the best books I've read. I'll be showing you those later. The big national news related to the coronavirus or the Communist Chinese Party virus from Wuhan, in case you haven't seen it, by the way, Epic Times. Oh my goodness. It's on HagmanReport.com. It's on HagmanReport.com. The link to the documentary, it's 55 minutes long. It really is a must see. I mean, I've got to tell you, did you see it?
No, I didn't see it. But if people want to know about this virus, mm-hmm. Epic Times is like at the top of their game on this. Like,
well, yeah.
Unbiased. They bring out all the facts. So that's where I go to get all my news about this stuff.
I've learned so much from the Epic Times. Especially about this and about China too. Yeah. Wow. Thank you though. Thank you for chiming in on there. Cause I know I see you always checking Epic Times, which.
Yeah. And they have a nice app too. That's free. And you just download it and the CCP virus button's right there. You just click on it and it's all the news is right there.
Thanks for saying that. That's really great. Epic Times. Now, we have nothing to do with them. We don't get paid for saying that. So this is where we get a lot of our information, and Eric does. So Epic Times. Download the app. I have a brief couple of videos. As I was mentioning, one of the big headlines that occurred over the last 24 hours, and I want to applaud President Donald Trump for this, is Trump cut funding for the World Health Organization. Oh, how great is that? There's two video clips. Again, before I bring on Dr. Proctor, two video clips. The first one being Senator Rick Scott talking about the World Health Organization, specifically about the WHO with respect to the Communist Chinese Party virus. Let's play that. He says, you didn't tell me? Give me a second. But folks, seriously, Senator Rick Scott appeared and was talking about the World Health Organization and a few things that I'm sure you know, but in case you don't, you really need to listen and to hear all of what he's got to say. It's only a couple of minutes. And again, I thank Dr. Richard Proctor for his patience as we just muddle through some things. And boy, I've got some questions for him. Oh my goodness. Listener questions. And I want to thank you for sending questions to studio@HagmanReport.com for Dr. Proctor. One of the biggest questions, of course, is President Trump's, role versus the governors here in handling the crises. And I say crises plural because each state to me signifies a different crime scene, and I view it like that, a crime scene, in different respects, a crime scene done by the actual, virus. Because to me, this is a weapon of war. But then the equally disturbing crimes by the tyrannical overreach of governors, of mayors, of county council individuals, county executives, even sheriffs. But let's take a look at Rick Scott.
Senator Rick Scott represents the state of Florida. He'd like to investigate the World Health Organization for what it's done in response to this pandemic. Senator, thanks so much for coming on tonight. Tell us why you believe the World Health Organization is in part culpable for this disaster.
Well, first off, they just work for China, Communist China. First, they said on January 14th in a tweet that, there was no evidence that there was human-to-human transmission. Lie. Then they said, like, I think on the 20th or something, China's doing a great job. Lie. I asked them, and then when Trump did the right thing by doing the travel ban, they attacked Trump for doing the wrong thing. I asked them to do an investigation on China back in February. I started talking about this like you did back in January. Did they ever do it? No. If they had done their job, everybody would have gotten more ready. We wouldn't have shut down this economy, and we wouldn't have all these people dead all over the world. So I went an investigation. I'm on Homeland Security. I've talked to the chairman, Ron Johnson. He's agreed to do it. We're going to investigate. Why did they do what they did? What was their purpose? And why are we, as American taxpayers, giving them some of our dollars?
Yeah, I mean, Bill Gates, who is the single largest donor, I think he gives more than anybody other than the United States World Health Organization, is out there this week saying the lockdown needs to continue indefinitely. Why are the people affiliated with the World Health Organization still treated as serious people when so many of them are liars and buffoons?
Well, first off, we should never, ever buy one more product from China. When you buy a product from China, you have to say, that's the group of people. All right, that completely lied to us and forced us to shut down our economy and killed American citizens and Italians and Spaniards on top of stealing all of our jobs before. They lie, and the WHO has been right up there with them, helping them. They parroted whatever Communist China said.
How long are we going to continue to fund this organization, do you think?
I hope this is the last year. And by the way, not only do I not want to fund the WHO, let's get the information. I can't imagine it's going to get any better than what we already know. But why are we funding organizations that are lying to us? I think we pay about 21% of their budget. China is less than 1% of their budget. So what's going on here? Why are they parroting what China's doing? And did they follow their protocol? I doubt that they followed their protocol for pandemics. I bet the WHO didn't do it. And why didn't they do it? So, and by the way, we've got to create an American delivery system for pandemics, for protective gear, for ventilators, for therapeutics. Stop this stuff of relying on China for anything.
Senator, thanks so much for that. Great to see you tonight.
Well, now, that was Senator Rick Scott. And let's follow this up. And again, I appreciate the patience of Dr. Richard Proctor. ProvisInstitute.com, folks, if you're listening to this right now, go ahead and bookmark that website and get it in queue to take a look at all of the books he's written. Oh, man, what a vast library. Okay, this next video, very quickly, this is an announcement by President Trump yesterday. Go ahead and play clip two.
Administration to halt funding of the World Health Organization while a review is conducted to assess the World Health Organization's role in severely mismanaging and covering up the spread of the coronavirus. Everybody knows what's going on there. American taxpayers provide between $400 million and $500 million per year to the WHO. In contrast, China contributes roughly $40 million a year, and even less. As the organization's leading sponsor, the United States has a duty to insist on full accountability. One of the most dangerous and costly decisions from the WHO was its disastrous decision to oppose travel restrictions from China and other nations. They were very much opposed to what we did. Fortunately, I was not convinced and suspended travel from China, saving untold numbers of lives. Thousands and thousands of people would have died. Had other nations likewise suspended travel from China, countless more lives would have been saved. Instead, look at the rest of the world. Look at parts of Europe. Other nations and regions who followed WHO guidelines and kept their borders open to China accelerated the pandemic all around the world. Many countries said, we're going to listen to the WHO, and they have problems the likes of which they cannot believe. Nobody can believe. The decision of other major countries to keep travel open was one of the great tragedies and missed opportunities from the early days. The WHO's attack on travel restrictions put political correctness above life-saving measures. Travel bans work for the same reason that quarantines work. Pandemics depend on human-to-human transmission. Border control is fundamental to virus control. Since its establishment in 1948, the American people have generously supported the World Health Organization to provide better health outcomes for the world and, most importantly, to help prevent global health crises. With the outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic, we have deep concerns whether America's generosity has been put to the best use possible. The reality is that the WHO failed to adequately obtain, vet, and share information in a timely and transparent fashion. The world depends on the WHO to work with countries to ensure that accurate information about international health threats is shared in a timely manner. And if it's not, to independently tell the world the truth about what is happening. The WHO failed in this basic duty and must be held accountable. It's time after all of these decades.
It's time. It's time for me to move my chair right. All right. And a little footnote with that. Thank you, President Trump, by the way. But a little footnote about Tedros, the head of the World Health Organization. Back last, or 2 years, 3 years ago, October 18th of 2017, Tedros announced that he had chosen, of all people, Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe to serve as the World Health Organization Goodwill Ambassador. And that name might ring a bell, Mugabe. Mugabe's appointment was criticized, especially by those in the know. You see, Mugabe, he had his own baggage. He brought his own baggage to that position. You know, his human rights, violations or alleged violations. Just saying. What an organization. All right. Now, many, many more things to talk about, including our rights as we are seeing them being whittled away. One of my favorite books is Saving the Constitution. Here's my copy right here. All right, Saving the Constitution. Folks, if you don't have this, oh, you got to read this. You won't be sorry. Equally important is this book. A Constitution, if you can keep it. Go to provisinstitute.com. That's provisinstitute.com. And again, over my shoulder over there, you can see the Liberty series. All right? And that series will give you more information about the historical foundation of our country, including the Constitution. provisinstitute.com. And Dr. Proctor, thank you so very much for your patience as I went through all of that stuff to kind of lay the groundwork for our visit together today.
Good lead-in. Good lead-in, Guy. We had interesting things to talk about. We have interesting things to talk about.
We do. We do indeed. Where do you want to start? I had sent, and I don't know if you saw this or had a chance to see this, I had sent a story, an article, about President Trump. And this is it here, folks. Whoops. Let's see. I don't know if you can see this or not. This is from the Associated Press. And I've been getting a lot of questions about this. It's President Trump. I alone can fix it. And this is the federal government versus the state governments in terms of what can be done in terms of opening and closing the states. Can we start there, or would you like to?
Oh, that's a good place to start.
Okay. All right.
I reviewed and looked at that also, since you pointed it out.
I've been getting a lot of...
I'm sorry.
I've just been getting a lot of inquiries about that. So, you know, yeah, let's start there, and you tell me what does our Constitution allow for? What's constitutionally correct?
None of the stuff he talked about. I'm sorry. He has no authority to dictate to the governors or the people anything that he wants to. Some folks use the word king, right, Biden? Hey, we don't have a king. And that's true. He's not the controller. He's the servant. He's the helper. He's the consistent. And he's doing a good job, but he sometimes, I don't like it, but sometimes he says things he should not say. That's too bad.
Okay. All right. Well, it's fair enough. But that's constitutional, and we would hold the same standard to any, whether it's Obama, Clinton, that doesn't matter. We have a constitution to follow, so it's up to the governors, right?
It's up to the governors and the people. The people are really in charge. People should not be going blindly ahead doing those things that appear that the government's told them to do. Come on, folks, you are in charge. It's we the people. Remember the first three words? We the people. Let's we the people do something about what we don't like that's coming out of government. Not with guns, guys, just with peaceful demonstration, peaceful ideas, peaceful thoughts. We need to get the government back under our control. Start with the local, move to the state, and lastly, the federal. State's very important. State's in charge. 10th Amendment gives the states everything that's not listed in the Constitution, and that's a lot of stuff. But, of course, over the years, we've decided that the federal government's smarter than any of the rest of us, so we have allowed them to tell us what they will do, and we've accepted it right now. All this in shelter in place. Oh, what an interesting way to say incarceration. Folks say there's not enough space in all the jails, so let's make each home one of those. If you're not allowed to leave your home, some policeman will arrest you, cite you, give you fines or punishments, then that's incarceration in your home, and you're being punished for leaving it. That's not how it works in the United States. And if we accept it, it will become the norm. And do we want that to become the norm? Guys, we must do something. We must stop just accepting what they tell us. Oh, my. And that's what I think about what Washington has said, what Trump has said. Let's talk about the WHO for a minute. You know, guys, come on. The Liberty Series. I have to go back to the Liberty Series. I'm going to do that a couple of times today. The Liberty Series. It helps people understand what the shadow government is. Now, what is a shadow government? The shadow government are the people who control the government whom you can't see. And you'll never see them either, really. You'll know who they are if you pay attention. I mean, I pay attention. I know Soros. Soros is a part of the shadow government. I know that. I know Rockefeller was a part of the shadow government. I know that. All you have to do is look at their activities. So start looking at the activities of more places. Shadow government, what is it? It's a group of people controlling the politics of the world. Who? Well, United Nations, set up in 46, started in 44, 45, when they had their meetings in Italy, when they began to start putting it together. Who put it together? The Communist Society and Americans who are part of the Communist Society. Why is it the Communist Society? Because those are the people that were being used at that time to control governments and to get started in proper direction, proper with quotes, proper direction. It's come from that. Now, the United Nations, all of its organizations are for the same, for one purpose. It's called the New World Order. So here we have the WHO saying things that they know will encourage spread this virus. And that's what they did. That's why they did what they did. The goal was this is not an accident. There's no accidents in government. This is not an accident. This particular thing was, there was a documentary done by Bill and Melinda Gates in November about this thing. And by Jove, it's following exactly what the documentary said. there's stuff happening. Here we have people coming down with it in places where there's no Chinese relationship right in the beginning. None at all. Well, how did it get here? Somebody shoot it over? I don't know how it got here. But I do know that government is constantly interfering in our lives, and they interfere to their best interests. That's why our Constitution's under fire. That's why our guns are under fire. All of that's under fire to get us into what's called the New World Order. And that's the goal. Get us all as slaves. And decrease the population enough so that we don't have a lot of wasted eaters. We don't want to have people just eating. We want people that are productive. Let's get rid of all those who are not productive by somebody's definition. Guys, we have got to do something. I listened to an item this week from Keith Hansen, one of your organization helpers, your guys.
Yep.
In that particular place, they talked about seven guys who got citations in one of the cities in California. Police guys all showed up. Wondered how come so many showed up at the same time. Seven guys cited. I think the word was $1,000 each. Folks, that's a punishment already, isn't it? Was there any court? Was there any jury? Was there anything? Let's look closely. Now, I'm not an attorney. We must get that straight. I'm not an attorney, fortunately. I'm a Constitution guy. So let's go to the Constitution. We are given, in the Fourth Amendment, we're given a secure home, secure rights, secure person, secure everything. In other words, secure property. That's what the Fourth Amendment is to secure ourselves against government. So when government comes in, they can arrest you, okay? And they can do that. They think they've got probable cause. If grand jury thinks they've got probable cause, they can arrest you. Now, what do you go to? Well, in this citation thing, you're going to go to an admiralty or maritime court. What is an admiralty court? If you read Article 3, Section 2, it talks about the Supreme Court having original jurisdiction in maritime courts. Of course they would. Those are courts on the water. Those are courts of the open sea. What's a court for the open sea? The captain on the ship stands up and says, guys, climb that mast. No, I ain't gonna. Yes, you are. No, I ain't gonna. Throws him in jail. But they call it the brig. Okay, so that's a maritime court. No jury, no help, no nothing. Just an edict by the power. So now let's take these seven guys. They're going to be taken to a traffic court or a citation court, or what do you want to call it? In that court, the judge is going to look at them. They're going to look at the results and say, $1,000, bang the gavel, you've had it. Where's your jury? There is no jury. Guys, admiralty courts are not constitutional within or outside of the oceans. They're okay for the oceans, navigable waters, but they're not okay for the land mass of the United States. It's San Francisco. It's not okay for an admiralty court to be held in San Francisco, New York, any of those places. It's definitely not any good and not valid way inside California. It's definitely not valid in Utah, where it's not a navigable water, but we do have the Great Salt Lake. You know, it's got boats on it sometimes. No. Navigable waters. And that really means like stuff like the Missouri or the Mississippi, Columbia, that kind of stuff. But mostly maritime courts are for ocean international waters. Now, what is a maritime court? That's where the captain of a ship passes judgment. Jury, he's the jury. He's the accuser, the prosecutor. There is no defense attorney. And he says, you're in the brig, and you are. That's what they do. That's done. That's a maritime court. That's what will happen to those people with those citations. That's what will happen if you wind up with a speeding ticket. That's what will happen if you wind up with a parking ticket. All these things are handled by a maritime court. You are authorized to have a jury for any crime. You're authorized. Before you can be punished, it's got to be a jury. That's what the Constitution says. That's what the amendment says. That's what the amendments are about. Now we're in 5 and 6. Those amendments say jury trials. They also, six also specifies, if I'm remembering correctly, I could look it up, but I'm not going to write this second. Six specifies $20. So what does that mean? Common courts must have an injury of $20 before there's a case. If there's no injury of a case, there's no $20, there's no injury. So if I steal a nickel and they take it to court, sorry, that's not over $20. But today, everything's over $20. So everything, you can have a jury for everything. Now, when the jury gets there, what do you think is going to happen? Well, the first thing you need to make sure the jury understands, and that's you, the guy who's been accused. You need to make sure that the jury understands that their first requirement is the law. Is the law constitutional? Is the law correct? If the law is not correct, there's no case. No case at all. Now, you see what's happening here? Now, that's Jefferson that says the jury decides what the case is. And that's, again, in my discussion of maritime admiralty law in Saving the Constitution. The jury decides whether or not there's a case because they got to decide whether or not there's a law that's constitutional. The judge will say to them, jury, you can only look at the facts. That's all you can look at, the facts as they're presented. That's not true, folks. That's not true. Constitution says you are supposed to be in a common law court, and the common law court is the jury decides whether or not the law is constitutional. Then there must be an injury of $20 or more. If there's no injury of $20 or more, then there's no case again. And you're acquitted. It's got to be that way. Now, I'm driving down the street. I'm driving at 80 miles an hour. It's a 30-mile zone. I haven't hit anybody. There's no injury. There could be, but there wasn't. Okay, they can't arrest me and try me and convict me for something that could be. No, no, no. I could rob a store, so let's arrest me because I could rob a store, right? No, that's not how it's done. You got to rob the store. You got to have an injury. So when you have the injury, then they arrest you. Then the injury is over $20. Now you're in court correctly. But if not, you're not in court. You're not correct. It's not right. Look in the part of Saving the Constitution. It's the second appendix, I believe.
It's actually on page 261. Appendix.
Thank you.
Appendix 1, Admiralty and Maritime Jurisdiction. And then
I got it mixed up.
Yeah. No, yes. That's fine.
That's
but,
right.
But I've got to tell you, this is you're going to be setting off a lot of, by saying this, and I understand this, and this is why, folks, you need to have with you, purchase Saving the Constitution at the very least. This is going to, ignite a lot of discussion among the sovereign citizen movement, as oxymoronic
no,
as
no, let's not go into sovereignty. Not sovereignty. No.
No. Right. And that's what you do here. And folks, there's a world of difference. So, okay. Continue, sir. But appendix
okay,
one.
Okay. Anyway.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So those seven guys, as Keith said, there should have been 1,000. And I agree with him. There should have been 1,000. What can the government do if you have 1,000 people meeting on that street? You're not rioting. Nobody's doing anything wrong. They're just visiting. And they come up to give them citations. There's 1,000. What are they going to do? 1,000 citations? That's overwhelming. That's how we start the rebellion or the fighting back. Okay?
Wow.
We start it by being bold together, not individually.
I'm glad you mentioned this. If you don't mind, I was going to boy, we're on the same wavelength here. Eric the Tech, if you can cue up that Twitter. It would be the, protesting, non-essential activity. Protesting is a non-essential activity. It's right there. Doctor, take a look at this, tweet. Okay. Let's see here. I'm not sure.
It's not there yet.
Okay. I'm not
just
sure.
Just thought I'd say that.
Yeah. there's a picture, Eric, about, I don't know where. No, it's up above that. That is a good one. You might have to go back to, you might have to hit the top tweet. Keep going up. There we go. Okay, there we go. Okay, so here's a situation as I understand it. There were protesters that gathered on a street corner in Raleigh, North Carolina, and they were issued tickets. They were asked to leave, and anyone who failed to leave were issued tickets. And if you scroll down now one more down from that, okay. What was the governor's order? Or what part of the governor order was violated here? And then it says protesting is a non-essential activity. And then, of course, you can scroll down for the comments, but, excuse me, but, it says expect major lawsuits because the governor cannot infringe on the constitutional right of free assembly. So this is what you're talking about, right? I mean, this is essentially what you're referencing.
That's right. That's what I'm talking about. That group violated nothing at all. Absolutely nothing. They're given the right of peaceful assembly. It's the Second Amendment. It's the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights.
All right.
Free assembly, free peaceful assembly, not riotous assembly.
Well,
and those guys were all peaceful.
So are the lockdown, the shelter in place, whatever you call them, lockdown, travel ban orders, are they unconstitutional?
In every case, yes. You're being incarcerated without due process of law. You're being accused of being a criminal without due process. You're not a criminal. Are you going to spread the disease? I don't know. That's not the issue. The issue is that you haven't been accused of anything. They haven't tested you even to see if you have any disease. I mean, a drunk driver gets tested, okay, before they decide he's bad. They test him. Okay, well, that's fair. I'm not sure that you still need to be tested for the virus. Not sure about that. Why should be tested for a virus? I mean, I wasn't tested for the flu last year. I wasn't tested. We can go back and a long ways back. I'm not tested for any of those things, but nobody shut down the government because of it. And nobody threw me in jail because of it. I've got a cold. Oh boy, we'll throw you in jail because you're going to pass it around. I don't think they do that yet. Don't think so.
No, I don't think so
That's
either.
What yeah. this is.
Okay. But now you're referring to the United States Constitution. These orders are given by the governors and by local and city and county officials.
Right.
How does that comport with the U.S. Constitution?
Article 6. I'm going to read you an Article 6 here. Is that okay? I'm going to read right out of Article 6, paragraph 3.
Okay.
Senators and representatives, before mentioned, that means the guys in the Constitution, and, there's an and, the members of the several state legislatures, which means all of them, and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution, which means you got to do what it says. It doesn't mean you get to choose. It means you're going to support this Constitution. This Constitution ratified is the only contract we have. It is the contract of today. And if they're not following the First Amendment of that Constitution, which is an add-on amendment, and according to Black's Law Dictionary, add-ons are okay. So here's the add-on. It says peace, the right to peaceably assemble. Well, okay, that says that you can peaceably assemble. Since I can peaceably assemble, you got to allow that because that's what Article 6 says you must do if you're going to live up to your oath of affirming the Constitution. Is that what you were talking about, Doug?
Indeed. It was, is, okay. So you can't, okay, so.
By the way, this is the book. Whoops, where is it? This is the book, guys.
That's the Constitution.
I'll get back here.
Yep.
Yeah, it happens to be well-worn. You can notice that. It's well-worn. Okay?
As well it should. Okay. So what you're saying is, excuse me, we have the United States Constitution. We have states, but the governors, but no state official, no county official can make any law that would violate any right granted by the Constitution. Simple
yes,
as that.
That
I mean, correct. I like That's simple. Correct. Okay.
Yes, that is. That is absolutely correct.
Okay.
No law can violate the Constitution. No ordinance can violate the Constitution. No regulation can violate the Constitution.
Well, I can think of a lot that many people are just. It's like
we have been conditioned. Doug, I don't mean to interrupt, but
no,
we've been conditioned. We have been taught by our school system, by the prior things that have happened in our country, we've been taught that the whatever the government says is what we're supposed to do. We've been taught that. This is another instance where they're testing how well we've been taught. They're testing how well we've been taught. If we haven't been taught enough, then they'll probably back away and continue the teaching and then try again. At the point where we've been taught enough, they'll take over. Are we going to let them do that? Is this the time? Is this the time that's going to occur? We must do something. Those people peacefully assembling in Raleigh were just right. Those guys on the corner in California, in that California city, they're just right. Those things are fine. Some people, there's places that say you can't play basketball. Go ahead and do it. Go, everybody, the whole community, go out, crowd the basketball court and play basketball. You've got to do those kinds of things, or this will become the norm. Now, I'm not saying that anybody should do anything that violates anything else, but this should be the norm. Now, someone's going to say, yeah, but all those people, they'll spread the disease. Well, I hate to say it quite this way, but I have a right to be there just as if I had the flu. I have a right to be there. I might spread the disease, but nobody has to be there that doesn't want to. So the other people are taking the risk that I'm not going to spread it. Everybody's taking a risk there, but it's their right to take that personal risk. It's their right. We can't begin to be mommy and daddy and tell everybody when to get up and when to go to bed, when to exercise, when not to exercise, what we can eat, what we can't. We can't do all those things. When kids are little, I'm talking about 5, 6, 7 years old, then parents do those kind of things. Try to do it to a teenager. Well, we're more than teenagers. We're adults. You don't do it to us either. Sorry, guys. Government's not our parent. Government is our servant, our helper, our slave. Servant's good. Not our slave, really, but our servant. What we ask them to do. But we must ask them as a group, not individually. Individually, they laugh at us. It's just like what we're doing with our representatives today. How many are there? 435.
Right.
Wow. How many should there be? Over 10,000.
Yep.
Because there are only 435. And when we gather, there's about 750,000 people for each representative in the United States today. So when one person speaks up, they don't care. If 1,000 spoke up, they'd pay a little bit. If 100,000 spoke up, they'd really pay attention. That's why it's supposed to be 30,000, so that it isn't so difficult to get them to pay attention. The Constitution's a perfect document, guys. It is a perfect document. There are no errors in it. It works for all time, just like the Ten Commandments. We should throw them out. Why, that was clear back in B.C. 1200 or some such thing. We got to throw those things out. They're no good. Oh, the times have changed. Well, they haven't. Ten Commandments still holds. And the Constitution, 200 years old, still holds. When we destroy the Constitution, we will have destroyed our country. If we get a new constitution, we will have destroyed our country. If we have a constitution of states, we will have destroyed our country. Constitution, 1788 ratification, stands, and we don't want to touch it.
Wow. Powerful words. That was very powerful. My guest, if you're just joining me, is Dr. Richard Proctor. His website, provisinstitute.com. And folks, the best book on the subject of the Constitution I've ever read is Saving the Constitution, as well as A Constitution If You Can Keep It. And for extra credit, extra knowledge, intense knowledge, historical, foundational knowledge of the Constitution, Liberty is the Liberty series, which is available on at provisinstitute.com. And I'll tell you something, I've learned more about the Constitution through reading the material by Dr. Proctor than anyone else. And I say that with all due respect to people like, John Coleman and others, because this is just phenomenal information. Okay, we're seeing as well, because this ties into what you said, we're seeing stores, And we can get into this next segment after the top of the hour break, but we're seeing stores roping off sections of merchandise. For example, Home Depot roping off flooring, Walmart roping off seeds, among other things, saying these are non-essential items. You can't buy these. And it seems like there's some sort of cooperation between the government and the stores, private enterprise. What, Doctor, is going on here, where the stores are acquiescing to this, I don't know, federal mandate, state mandate, local mandate, I mean, whatever mandates, they're just rolling over. I just don't quite get this. Is there something more? What am I missing? Or what do you have to say about that?
Well, I don't think you're really missing it. It's people that have been conditioned to do what the government says, and they do not know their rights. Again, this book's back again, if I can get it up here.
Yep.
They do not know their rights, folks. It's very important that you know what this book says. I've studied this thing right and forward, forward and back, punctuation, capitalization, all those things are important. Don't just read the words, look at what it says. But if you want to, and I recommend it, you get a hold of this book. Like Doug just showed it up, like he showed. Get a hold of this book. I'm having trouble getting in the right spot. Never mind.
Me too. I do that all the time. So
get in touch with that book. It does explain in our language today what's going on. And that's important because nobody really knows what corruption of blood is. Ex post facto?
Yeah.
People don't know it. You know, those are terms that are in the Constitution, tough to read. We don't know what they mean. So I tried to do that. I tried to give everybody an idea of what it says. Maritime and admiralty law, for example. Nobody knows what those are about. Nobody realizes that they're in an admiralty court. And that's a captain's court on the high seas. Well, they didn't have a rowboat to get there. They drove their car. So obviously it's not on the high seas. Those kinds of things we need to know. You cannot fight against something, stop something you don't know anything about. Well, the store leaders don't know those things either. But they want to agree with the government, so they do that. Because the health department is going to come in and close them down, have no rights, don't pay any attention. The police is going to come and close them down. Well, you know, you're going to take that risk. Again, they act outside their constitutional right, too, because they don't know it either, and because they're being told to do things by their people who don't know it either. I mean, nobody knows this book. Nobody. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry, you go to these colleges that profess they're teaching it. They are not teaching it. They're teaching the adulterated version. I had to be very careful whenever I went to a source that professed to be teaching the Constitution to look up their information to use any of it because it didn't teach it. It taught what the adulterated version has become. Mm. And if I had a red pencil and I used the Constitution and I crossed out everything that the adulterated version has already taken out, I probably would start with We the People, and then I'd have to close my book.
Mm.
Probably all that would be left.
Wow. Okay. Well, if you don't mind, when we come back, I know you addressed admiralty and maritime jurisdiction. I want to get a little better handle on that. Would that be an okay area to?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about Hegel, too, a little bit.
Okay. Okay.
In the distance, somewhere.
Okay. Yeah. In whatever order you prefer, as we're up against the top of the hour network break on Global Star Radio, Satellite Radio Network. Folks, you're listening to Dr. Richard Proctor. ProIsInstitute.com is his website. HagmanReportLive.com is our website. That's HagmanReportLive.com. Also, Hagman Store and HagmanReport.com. We are going to be right back after this. Stay where you're at, 2 minutes, and we'll be back.
Reporting on what the mainstream media won't, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network. Radio Network.
Exposing the New World Order.
And welcome to Hagmann, where truth can't be silenced. This is the Hagmann Report. My guest, Dr. Richard Proctor. He's the author of a number of books, including Saving the Constitution, which I've got right here. Thanks for the widescreen, Eric, because, you know, I'm location challenged, right?
You're not Vanna White?
Yeah. Yeah, not Vanna White indeed. Any stretch of the imagination. But Saving the Constitution, it's a great book, folks. If you haven't got your copy yet, please get your copy. I'm telling you, this addresses things, well, it addresses all of the Constitution, but it addresses things like admiralty and maritime law. Don't listen to what you think is, don't listen to these self-appointed experts. Go to the expert, and that's Dr. Richard Proctor. A Constitution, if you can keep it as well. This is a fantastic book. It's spiral bound, it lies flat, and I'll tell you what, homeschooling.
Can I buy a vowel?
Okay. Can I buy a vowel? Listen to him. I'm your straight man, right? All right. Yeah. Oh my goodness, Eric the Tech, folks. We wouldn't be here without him, and I want to thank him seriously for all he has done. Hey, from my hair to the electronics, MacGyvering, everything. Again, Dr. Richard Proctor, provisinstitute.com. So glad to have him with me. So, Doctor, before the break, I had asked about maritime and admiralty law. You mentioned Hegel. I'll tell you what, I'm going to toss it to you. You just go wherever you think, and just take it, and we'll okay, just have a conversation.
Here's the thought. I don't know exactly what you wanted to discuss more about admiralty or maritime law. It's in the Constitution as the original jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. It's one of the powers of the Supreme Court.
Okay. Here's my main question. All right. For clarification. There is this meme, this theme, this erroneous idea going around out there. And it's actually being taught. If you can believe this, it's being taught on the internet. And of course, if it's on the internet, you know it's got to be true.
Oh yes, it's true.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
That
media is all true too.
Right. Well, you see, our courthouses are actually foreign vessels in dry dock. Our prisons are vessels in dry dock. That is, as well. And we are, because of the flag having gold fringe, that means we're under maritime law, admiralty law. And if you're 12 miles from a waterway, only that law is only good for 12 miles from a waterway. I'm not sure if I'm getting all this right, but it's nonsense, you know, and you've got this, a lot of this is nonsense because it's not working that way. It wasn't, to my knowledge, it was never intended to work that way. Do you have any? Are you aware of this crazy stuff? There's always that thread of truth to things, but then there's that fringe stuff that's out there. So, are you aware of any of this that's going on?
I've not heard about those things, Doug, that you're talking about. 12 miles from the coast. Oh, come on now.
12 miles from the waterway.
Yeah. Why not 12 and a half? Yeah. Why not 5?
Those
are not. Those are just things that people throw around. Oh, wouldn't this be interesting? And pretend like it's right and pass it around. It's not right. You want to know about admiralty law? Get in the 1828 dictionary and read about it. There's no question. It's easy. Admiralty law means law of the ocean. That's what it is. It's law of the ocean. And that does include navigable rivers. Okay?
Right.
That's it.
Right.
That's all.
Well, people are saying, well, you can't arrest me. You've got no jurisdiction. This is an admiralty court, and I'm not in the, in the area of the maritime jurisdiction.
Let me mention that about no jurisdiction. If a policeman from, let's say, city XYZ comes up to you and you're in city ZWX, and he wants to arrest you, he has no jurisdiction. That's true. But if a policeman from your city comes in to arrest you, he does have jurisdiction. So he can. But he can't prove you've got a crime yet. That goes to court. That's when the admiralty law shows up. You know, we've got to be a little careful about what we call jurisdiction and what we don't. I mean, jurisdiction is Another instance, a college campus has campus police. Well, they can't go downtown and arrest somebody. They have no jurisdiction. But the state police can come on campus and arrest people. They have jurisdiction. You just have to know that. Whether or not they have something that you can be convicted of is a whole nother matter.
Got it.
And perhaps the best is to be arrested so that you can get into court and have a good time.
Okay. And yeah, which I agree. And by the way, that's why in Saving the Constitution, Admiralty and Maritime Law, the appendix there is about five and a half pages long. And, yes. It's that simple. You don't need to be taking, you know, hours upon hours of classes to undo with respect to the Constitution. All right. So yeah, thank you for clearing that up. That was really the only aspect of things. Okay, so to you.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I understood what you wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
I'd like to go to Hegel a little bit. H-E-G-E-L. Hegelism, all kinds of stuff. This is a gentleman who lived in Germany in the 1800s. I'm not sure of the date. That's not important. Hegelism. Here's the philosophy of Hegelism. Listen close. There's a case where I'm going to try to get my hands here so they're seen, okay? Good. Here's a case where you have a synthesis, a thesis that's over here. And I'm going to try to get this right. And you have an antithesis. I can't get it right. Okay, to the left you have a thesis, and to the right you have an antithesis. And the right and left doesn't make any difference in this case. It's just a direction. Now, the middle of those two is what they call a synthesis. It's established. It's an equilibrium point in between those two. Now, the bad guys, let's call them the left. Okay, sometimes it's the right though, but let's call them the left. The bad guys on the left, the world government, the one world order, they want to destroy our Constitution. So they take a big bite and make something up that's really terrible. They say the Constitution's a farce, really terrible. And the guys on the other side say, well, it's not a farce. It's not a farce. Maybe it has some errors. And all of a sudden, the thesis that the Constitution is a farce has moved a little bit to the right from the left. And it's established a new synthesis. Okay? Let's use another item. Let's use liquor. We've decided in some area that one point, of alcohol in your bloodstream is intoxication enough to not drive. Okay? Well, somebody comes in and challenges, and they say it's really 0.8. Okay, so then we move to 0.8. We're getting close to zero. See, that's the goal. We move to 0.8. That sets for a little while. That sets a new synthesis, a new middle ground. And then somebody comes up and says, well, it's really 0.7. And then, well, okay, now we agree that's 0.7. Now they set a new synthesis. And no, it's really 0.5. And eventually it gets to zero. That's what the Hegelism is all about. Find a way to get everybody to zero where you want them to be. And the left is the power. The right doesn't really, the honest people don't really ever fight back very hard. The evil people fight constantly. I give you an illustration. If you've been to court, it goes to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court says, nope, we're going to outlaw that. It comes back again. With a new case and a new way. Now you go take that one to the Supreme Court, and they say, no, that's not quite right. But maybe this. So it's thrown out, but it comes back again. The Supreme Court turns it down. It comes back again. Supreme Court turns it down. It comes back again. Supreme Court turns it down. Ah, now the Supreme Court agrees. And it's never heard of again. Why isn't the right coming out and saying, hey, that's not right, and trying to go back the other direction? But they never do. When the Supreme Court says it's wrong, they bring something else back to try to test it again. When the Supreme Court says it's right, then they hold right there and they don't change anything, and they've established a new synthesis in that pattern, aiming towards the one world order. That's Hegelism at its best. I discuss it in every volume, in one way or another, in every volume of the Liberty series. I go in detail about what Hegelism is all about. The synthesis, thesis and antithesis or antithesis. Those four words, look them up places, see what they're all about. They're very important words, and that's what we mean when we say we must compromise. That's it, right there. We don't must compromise. We don't compromise on killing somebody and say, well, we just killed him a little. No, 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 you either kill him or you don't. It's not compromised. Go ahead, Doug.
No, you know, very well explained. And, of course, from that, the Hegelian dialectic, the...
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, folks, you know, we toss these phrases around without really a lot of times without really understanding what they mean and what the significance is. And I can attest to the fact that the Liberty series really gets into the Hegelian dialectic as it applies to really the creation of our republic and how our republic has. And I don't want to misrepresent this, but progressed so yes, this is so topical, especially for today. You know, the Hegelian dialectic, the thesis, antithesis. And you know, philosophical view the basis of all of our constitutional arguments to some extent?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is, Doug. It is the basis because somebody wants to change what it says. All that discussion about it doesn't work for our day has come from this Hegelian doctrine. That's what it's all about. Nobody thought about that in 1819. Nobody thought about it in 1900.
Right.
Maybe a little, but slowly it crept in. I sometimes call it the nose in the tent flap, the camel and the Arab going down the desert. And there's a sandstorm. Like, and the Arab, he climbs in his tent. He's very comfortable, but the camel's outside. The camel says, oh, can I just put my nose in there? Can I just put my nose in there? It's so tough on my nose. And the Arab says, well, you know, that's not very big. Go ahead. You can put your nose in. So the camel does. And then he says, can I just put my eyes in there, it's stinging my eyes. Well, okay, that's all right. You go ahead and do that. But can I just put my head in there? Oh, this is terrible. Oh, okay, you can. And bingo, in a few more days, the Arab's out in the sandstorm and the camel's in the tent. And
sure.
That's Hegelism at its best.
And we're seeing that. We're seeing that with what's happening today. I think with the government overreach, you know, just, hey, you can't. Yeah, you can't, well, you know what, you really can't, you can't drive anywhere, that's non-essential. You can't engage in any non-essential activities. And then, well, what's essential? Well, what's non-essential? Well, you know what, protesting is a non-essential activity. You know, that's kind of the entire body underneath that tent because it really rips out the First Amendment. It's against the First Amendment. The same thing. Hey, gun stores, non-essential activities, non-essential businesses. Well, there goes our
Second Amendment. Well, I think the gun stores are very essential.
I do too. But how many?
Very.
But we're seeing gun stores being closed down, or we have seen them been closed down. And there's been some, we'll reopen them and sorry about that. You know, that wasn't overreach, but boy, we're seeing, you know, we're seeing things. Doctor, have you, in your life, what we're seeing today, did you ever think we'd be seeing the stuff that we're seeing today, with respect to?
No, I would look back in November. I wouldn't have thought we'd see anything like this by April of this year. My, oh my. That's like an avalanche going over the Niagara Falls. We are being stormed at. Stormtrooper. It couldn't be worse. We're giving up freedoms as if we were in a Nazi government, a communist government, looking at gulags. We are in trouble and it's all mental. It's all conditioning. It's all how we've been taught. It's all the importance we put on whatever the government says. It's not right. We must not follow that road. It's terrible. Here's a statement that our buddy, I don't know Keith Hansen at all, but here's a statement from him. The essence of freedom is measured by how much the government leaves us alone. Now I got that out of his out of his Monday show. The essence of freedom is how much the government leaves us alone. And if they don't leave us alone, we're not free. And today, they're not leaving us alone. It's mm-hmm. very important. These concepts, guys, these concepts. We're being brainwashed? No. We're being snuck up on, and they're going to catch us, and they're going to say, oh, we didn't mean that today. Next week, they'll say, that's exactly what we meant. Now get busy. That what's happening to us. We cannot allow that.
Okay, so we, you know, Keith, by the way, is a tremendous asset to the network, and he's, you know, look, I've spent a lot of time with Keith, and we were in D.C. together, you know, so I love his program. And that's a marvelous statement, you know, about freedoms. But how do we get, I have a feeling that we're never going to see the freedoms that we saw prior to this lockdown or whatever you want to call it. We're not going to see, we're not going to get everything back. It's going to, the country is going to look different and it's going to feel different. It already feels different. So,
yes.
Man, what do we do? That's probably the next, I got to tell you that seriously, the next, or maybe even the most popular question is, starts out with Doug. You know, I heard your show. Not, but what do we have? What can we do about it? What do we do? What should we do about it? What can we do about it? So I'm asking you, what can we do about this?
Well, that came to me as a question from one of the listeners of the show. He came to me and he says, okay, on an email, didn't knock on the door. He came to me in an email and said, what can we do about it? Well, I wrote back to him much the same thing as I've been saying here today. We must, as a group, band together. Let's go back to the Revolutionary War. England, what can we do about it? What can we do? We can amass weapons. So they came to get them. They didn't get them, but they came to get them. They had the committees of safety that met all up and down the coast. These people met. What can we do? And slowly they came to a point where it boiled over and they said, we must go to war. And we must take these guns and we must shoot them. And that happened in Concord and Lexington. I don't want us to get that far. I don't want that to happen. Although, guys, if we don't do something soon, we may have to. But I don't want that. I don't encourage that. That's not right. People die. I don't want that. The economy is destroyed. Everything's uprooted. I don't want that. War is never good. Never. Well, I shouldn't say never like that. Sometimes it is. It was necessary. The revolutionary was necessary, or we would not have the freedoms we have today. So we have a constitution. Guys, we have a constitution. I don't know why I wrote this book. This book, Saving the Constitution, I was inspired to write, so I wrote it. It took me about a year to put it all together, published it last May, give or take a little bit. Wow, it's taking a little time as it gets traction, a little bit and a little bit, but now I've had people ordering it every day. People are ordering it now. It's an important book, not because I wrote it, but because it talks about and teaches what the Constitution is. That's what's important. Now, if we would just look at the rights that we have in that document, read the rights. There are 27. Read the rights that are in that document. Understand the rights. Understand the government's activities. Understand their limitations. The federal government's limitations, the state government. Understand these limitations. Remember, we the people are in charge. So we the people need to have safety committee meetings, perhaps, organize peaceful things. That rally in North Carolina would have sure been a lot better if it had 1,000 or 2,000 people at it instead of what looked like 100 to 150. It was effective anyway, but it looked like it needed to be more effective.
Sure.
We need to do that. Keith said, let's go to that basketball court with 1,000 people. That's the way. Don't go there with any anger. Just go there to say, guys, we want our rights back. And all of you do it. We've got to do something before somebody pulls a gun. And that'll be a bad day when somebody pulls a gun and pulls that trigger.
Boy,
we can't do.
Yeah, I hope that never, I pray that never happens. But, Doctor, do you think there are enough, well, are there enough people who care enough to assemble? You know, I've been part of groups, Coach Dave Dunbar, a great friend of mine, CoachDaveLive.com. I mean, it seems, the ideas are there, and it seems like there are people who want to do things, but I guess my question is, are there enough people who want to go out there and say, you know, I want my rights back? Do we have the numbers? In theory we do, but in practice, do we? Do we have the numbers?
Well, the Revolutionary War was fought with 3% of the country. And that's not even where it started. It started in Boston with about 900. Okay, that's where it started. On the way back from Concord, the revolutionary forces, the patriots, the Minutemen, made their self known. They did it with guns, but it didn't happen. Today, we can look at the Constitution, hold it in our hands and say, guys, this is the Constitution. Hold my book in their hands and say, the Constitution is here and it's explained and we know what it is now. This is the document. We want our country back. I wouldn't say rights, but that's true. But we want our country back because the federal government is overstepping all of its bounds. We want our country back. You do not want any way, shape, or form a constitutional convention. No, I can't say that enough.
Boy,
capital letters.
Yeah.
In pitch 36, we do not want a constitutional convention. Here's the reason. I want to be clear about this. Every time a constitutional convention has convened on the shores of North America, every time when the gavel came down to say the meeting is begun, they changed the rules. Every time when it went to the Articles of Confederation, the rules were you can't change the previous Northwestern Treaty. When it came in, the gavel came down and immediately they changed that treaty to create the Articles of Confederation. They met in Philadelphia. You cannot change the Articles of Confederation. You must amend them. You cannot change them. Has to be different. The gavel dropped. They rolled down the windows. We're going to do it in secret and we're going to write a new constitution. And they did. They came up ratification of the Articles of Confederation was unanimous, had to be all 13 colonies. Nothing could be done with all 13. Mm. The ratification of the Philadelphia Constitution said 2/3 of the states. The ratification of the constitutions I've seen says a committee in Washington, D.C. That's what the ratification will mean. Everybody says, well, it'll have to be ratified by the states. No, it won't. They'll have a new ratification procedure in the new constitution, which will eliminate the states. Folks, we can't have a constitutional convention. We can't have a constitution of the people's convention. They're using all these words to say we got to meet, we got to destroy the document. That's what it means.
Mm.
We got to meet, we got to destroy the document. That is, they're saying, oh, look at all the good we can do. They can only do what we tell them. No, it'll never happen. They've always dropped the gavel and changed the rules, and they will again. And we cannot trust the environment today to give us any kind of a document that was anywhere near the document of 1787.
Amen.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
We can't do it. It won't happen. We do not have the people today in power that will allow those people in power to come and do one that doesn't throw out 1887 and bring in a 2020 that will destroy our constitution and country. Guys,
that's right.
Let's move on to another subject. If you don't mind, let's move on to another subject.
And before we do, I just want to tell the audience, you know, saving the constitution, I'm doing what you're doing.
I gave up.
Yeah. What I like about this, saving the Constitution, because I've got a copy of the Constitution in my desk drawer. There's wires. I can't open the desk drawer. But what I like about this book is I can look at the Constitution and I can read it, but I what you did with saving the Constitution, you gave us the Constitution and you explained it in language that I can understand. I don't know if that makes sense to people or to you, but in certain areas, when I read certain passages of the Constitution, I'm thinking, okay, you know, what does that mean? Well, you tell us what that means.
Spent a lot of time doing that, Doug.
You know, and that's the thing. A lot of people, I believe, there are a lot of good, well-meaning people out there who have read the Constitution, but may not understand 100% what they read. And that's why I like this book, because it really encapsulates what the Constitution means. So, folks, by all means, Saving the Constitution. If you don't get your copy today, you need to do it today. So please do that. So yes, Doctor, provisinstitute.com is where you get it. provisinstitute.com. And you know what? No shipping charges. Oh, how great is that? provisinstitute.com, Saving the Constitution. And again, for extra credit, the Liberty series, as well as the Constitution, if you can keep it, for the homeschoolers and for your general knowledge as well. So, sir, yeah, let's go ahead and whatever topic you'd like to hit on.
I'd like to wonder back one more thing about the Saving the Constitution.
Sure.
Some of the punctuation is ignored. It is very important to see the punctuation. Supreme Court case in 1931 about Amendment Article 5. To make Article 5 say what they wanted it to say, they deleted a comma and changed the whole meaning of the document. That's not how it's done, folks. But if you don't realize that, you might miss that comma. You might miss the and, the or semicolon, semicolon or, semicolon or, semicolon. You might miss those things. They're very, very important. That's how you find out what the powers of the Supreme Court are. You look at the semicolons and the dashes. You look at the commas. Outline it. That's how you do it. Well, I did it for you, so you don't have to. If you want to, you still can. You can check that Constitution is copied precisely from the 1887 document in Saving the Constitution. And then we talk about it all the way through, trying to make sure people understand what it says. Sentence by sentence in cases.
Yep.
Word by word in some cases. For example, the word treason. The word treason doesn't apply except in time of war. You can't be treasonous except in time of war. That's what the 1828 dictionary says. So when people say that the president is treasonous, where's the war? If we don't have a war, there's no treason. Now, we can have other things, misdemeanors and things like that. Okay, law, but war, treason means war. Anyway, those are the kinds of things you need to know. That's the language the Constitution was written in. You need to know that language. That's why the 1828 dictionary is so important. And I use it. I don't have a copy on my computer, but I use it. I look it up every time I have a question on these issues. Let's go on to another subject. You brought it up earlier today. It's called the gun laws, the gun rules. We're going to take all your guns away from you. Guys, let's do a little bit about guns, okay? First, I want someone to, no, I don't want you to, I will read it to you, but if you want to, you can do it. We're looking at Article 1, we're looking at Section 8. That's what we're looking at, Article 1, Section 8. I'm going to read again. I'm reading here in Section 8, Paragraph 12. Congress shall have power to raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that use shall be for a longer term than 2 years. In other words, there's no standing army. Uh-oh, what did I just say? We have something like 500,000 to 1 million people under arms, standing army. No, not constitutional. No money shall go to that use shall be longer for a period or a term of 2 years. Then the next paragraph, 12, says to provide and maintain a navy. So that's constitutional. And I think that includes Marines, because the Marines are a part of the navy. Just my feeling. I can't find that anything that backs that up, but I think that's true. Now we go to 15. Oh, 14 first.
14, yep.
To make rules for the government and regulation of the land and naval forces. The land and naval forces. Okay, that's Army and Naval forces.
to make rules for it. That's 14. 15, to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrection, and repel invasions. No, it doesn't say that they're going to run around the world. It just says suppress insurrections and repel invasions. Now, how is a militia going to work? Page 16, paragraph 16, to provide for organizing, arming. Now, remember that says it, the Congress shall have power to provide for arming the militia. Uh-oh, what did that just say? That just says the constitutional mandate is for each state to have a militia, and the federal government provides the weapons. That's what that says, guys. It's not hidden. It's right there. They're not supposed to be taking them away. They're supposed to be providing them. What kind of weapons? Bows and arrows? Slingshots? It's supposed to be the weapons that the army itself, that they talk about in 12, has when the militia is called up to active duty. Called up to, what's the militia called up to? Repel invasions, suppress insurrections. That's what the militia's for. It's not the National Guard. The National Guard is a standing army. Nope, this is militia. What is a militia? 1812 again. I mean, 1828 dictionary. A militia is every male person, capable male person. Now, that's what it says. I think it means also young ladies, okay? I think that means, but I don't recommend it. I recommend the ladies stay home and do the good things that need to be done at home. But I get in trouble when I say that, so I won't say that. Okay, militia is everybody. Now, let's go to the state of Utah. The state of Utah has about 3 million people. So if the state of Utah has 3 million, we take away the kids, the teenagers, those kind of folks. We take away the old people like me, the old guys like me. Okay, take away the old guys. We probably at least 800,000 if we don't include the women. 800,000. So we have a militia of 800,000 armed by the federal government with the armaments that they use today, including planes and tanks, all of those things. The government already has the Navy. We don't have to worry about that. But the state militia, the Utah state militia, will be armed with all the activity, all the arms, all the weapons, everything that the current army has, all of them. Okay? That's what the militia would get. That's what they should be armed with, just like they did it in the Revolutionary War. The federal government that existed at the time, under the they didn't have a constitution, but they had the Articles of Confederation. Under the government at the time, they armed each state with everything the British had that they had so they could fight the British. They had the best muskets, the best cannons, the best mortars, everything that was available. Today, it would be the best guns, the best howitzers, the best cannons, the best tanks, the best armored cars, the best armored vehicles, the best computer lasers, everything. That's what the militia should have. That's what paragraph 16 says. To provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. So this is what that says. Congress is going to provide the rules. The states are going to follow those rules, appoint the officers, and follow those rules to make sure the militia works. They're going to organize it according to what the federal government, before what Congress says. They're going to be armed by the Fed, by Congress. They're going to be disciplined according to the rules that the Congress lays out. In other words, this is a joint deal. That's what paragraph 16 says. That's Article 8. Section 8 of Article 1. A very precise situation where we have a layout that if we were to do, a lot of the problems we have today would go away. Just that by itself. We wouldn't be in Afghanistan because militias only repel invasions or put down insurrections. And the Constitution says that's what we should be doing. It doesn't say we should be wandering over the world, taking care of everybody. We're not the parent of the world either. We shouldn't be sending billions of dollars outside this country. Our debt is too high. We can't afford to send billions of dollars to everywhere else, but we do. There is no provision in the Constitution in any place for any money of the taxpayers to go anywhere out of the United States.
If we want to have charitable organizations do that, that's for them to do. We have no provision, unconstitutional. All that money is being spent for foreign aid, unconstitutional. It's nice to do, but not good. So let the charities do it. They will. Charities will do it. If they have the money, they will do it. Guys, we've got to get back to this document. This document fixes everything. So if we do that, we talked about that, the security. Let me read a little bit here, an article in Second Amendment, very important in the Second Amendment, on this subject of the militias. Okay. By the way, the Second Amendment is the only amendment that really repeats anything that's in the basic document. But here we go. Second Amendment says, right off the first five words, a well-regulated militia. There it is. Now they say why. Being necessary to the security of a free state. What is a state? In every instance of the Constitution, state means Tennessee, Ohio, Michigan, New York, California, Colorado. That's what a state means, and it's always capitalized. Very important. The right of the people to keep and bear arms is another paragraph. And then it defines it. Shall not be infringed. Now, that's not, may not be. In some instances, can be. We might do it. Doesn't say that. It says it won't be. By the way, that was my fist. It won't be. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. They will be a part of a militia. Okay, it doesn't say that, but that's what they will be. And that's necessary for our freedoms within the borders of our country. It's not for hunting. It's necessary for our freedoms in the borders of our country, of the United States, and the freedoms of each state. Now, that's what the Constitution says. These people who think they're abiding by with all these little things, that's what the government says. That's what the Constitution says. Guys, that's where we need to be. That's where we need to be. Now, I'd like to move on to another subject. Unless you have questions about that subject or want to talk about more about that, let's do that first.
All I want to say is when you read this book, folks, again, Saving the Constitution, it's amazing how everything is, the Constitution was drafted in an order that is so easily understood when you explain it in this book. In the Second Amendment, it's interesting. Were you right? You know, what did the founders say? They said that the American people have a collective right to protect themselves against the evil of standing armies by forming a general militia composed of all of the people. That is a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, which again goes back to, you point back to Article 1, Section 8, paragraphs 12 through 16, actually, and 15 and 16 with
emphasis. I only represent in there 15 and 16, or it really goes to 12.
Right. But it's amazing when you get this book, again, folks, when you get this book, how much sense it makes. It really does. So go ahead, continue.
Okay. You made some statistics today. You even wondered about them. 8.7% of the retail declined 8.7%. Those are government statistics, guys. They have no validity whatsoever. Okay? I can look around in my community and know that it's at least 50 or 60. I don't have to ask the government what it is. I can look. I have to call and ask, are you open or not? By the way, when I want to go someplace, I do call and ask, and I go there and do it. Yep. And if they say, well, we don't take care of you because of the lockdown, I say, thank you very much. I'll move on to somebody who will. That's what I do. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
I'm the same way. Believe me, at this point, I'm the same way. So, I admire you for doing that, you know? I don't even know if I should admire you for doing it. It's what we need to do, right? It's what guys do.
Yes, I think so.
It's what free people do, right?
Yes, that's what free people do. And I consider myself free, and I don't need daddy government telling me what to do. Remember what he said, the essence of freedom is measured by how much the government leaves us alone. Yep. That's it. That's a measurement. I like that phrase.
Yeah, I do too.
I'm going to use it a lot. Now let's talk a little bit about the other subject that came up today, World Health Organization, WHO. You talked a little bit, or someone, I guess it was you, may have been one of the guys on the clips, about how much we support the WHO. By the way, isn't that money going to someplace else, not our own people? Taxpayers' money being spent somewhere that's not constitutional?
Yes.
I'll be darned. The United Nations was organized for the purpose of the One World Order. I don't care what the mission says. It was organized for the purpose of achieving a One World Order. That's what the League of Nations was for, to achieve a One World Order. The United States didn't join, so it fell apart. But we did join the One World Order, the pre-One World Order called the United Nations. The United Nations has all kinds of people out there, UNESCO, WB, IMF, WHO, all kinds of initials, which all mean we are controlling your life somehow. WB means World Bank. IMF means International Monetary Fund. Those are both United Nations functions to get people, countries, people dependent on United Nations and their money, their activities. You've heard of the heritage sites. Perhaps you haven't. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of heritage sites all over the world. We have bunches of them in our country. One of them's called the Statue of Liberty. Another one's called the Yellowstone Park. Okay? Yellowstone National Park. They're both heritage sites. What does that mean? They're owned by and controlled by the United Nations. That's what that means. Heritage sites are controlled by the United Nations. We just pretend like we control them. They tell us. In fact, the United Nations didn't like the fact that there was mining going on close to the Yellowstone Park. And so they, United Nations, drew a border about 16 miles outside of the United Nations, of the West Yellowstone Park, and decided that was to be controlled. Couldn't have any mining, couldn't have any farms, couldn't have anything done in that, because that was going to destroy the habitat of the World Heritage Site called Yellowstone Park, Yellowstone National Park. So guys, that's what heritage sites are. That's what the UN is doing. That's where Agenda 21 came from. That's where the 2030 agenda came from. That's where sustainable development came from. All of those things are to control our lives. That's it, guys. That's where it all comes from. Then they send their NGOs, non-governmental organization. Thank you. They send their non-governmental organizations out, funding them, by the way, funded by our money, to come to our cities, our local communities, our area, and tell us what we should have in zoning, what we should have, where apartments should be built, what should be done here, what should be done there. And they call it sustainable development, which means that the country, the world will be sustained if we just develop in accordance with our goals. Now, if you want to really read shocking stuff, look at the 2030 agenda. The 2030 agenda says they're going to control how many people are in your home. They're going to control how you can eat. They're going to control how you live. They're going to control your air conditioning, your heating. They're going to control your lives. They're going to control where you can live. They're going to put borders around your cities so that the wildlife will be able to live in peace. They're going to control everything you have. And we'll be living in communist Russia. And if we don't do it right, we'll be sent off to the gulag in Arizona. Guys, that's what this is all about. And it's all radiating from the United Nations. And that's part of the World Health Organization, which is also radiating from whatever the United Nations wants. They wanted this thing global. So that's why they said what they did. We're going to make this a global event. We didn't do this for just one country. We got to get it all around the world. So we're going to really get mad at anybody who tries not to live up to that. Now we've all lived up to it and it's all over the world. Now they don't mind if we try to stop it because it's already out there. That was the intent. This intent was to start something. This was not an accident. There's no coincidence in government. My Liberty series will outline how these things happen over and over and over again. I have watched these things occur all the way back to, well, I didn't start watching these things until the 1960s, but I have watched them. I've studied the stuff that happened before. I mean, they wanted us in World War I. So They got us in World War I by lies. Then they sunk the Lusitania. 100 Americans were on board. That brought us into the war because the government had already convinced us we needed to be on a war footing. So when that happened, we were. Bingo, we were there. Pearl Harbor. Now, I agree that we had to stop the Nazi Axis organization. Japan, Italy, and Nazi had to be stopped. But maybe it wouldn't even have started if we hadn't let the shadow government do it. Anyway, so it got started. Now, our government, Roosevelt, said, we got to be in this. So he asked a guy to come in, set a committee, and they started it in April of 1941. And they said, tell us what we should do to get Japan involved in the war without our firing the first shot. So he did. Came up with a whole plan, and they did it. And we got into it. They call it the Day of Infamy. No. The Day of Infamy was in April. And it wasn't the day that Pearl Harbor was bombed. It's the day that it was started to be bombed. And you can read all about that in the book called The Day of Deceit. Okay? Oh, very, very clear. These things are all planned. There is no happenstance. Marshall, who's the chief marshal, he said to the media in November, we're going to be attacked, and told them all kinds of stuff. But don't say anything. And they didn't. And we were. Then they all pretended like it was a surprise. Oh, no. What happened? Hey, everybody knew. You're going to watch Tora, Tora, Tora. You have a nice movie and it's fun. That's all it is. It's a nice movie and it's fun. It's not historical at all. They knew where those ships were every day leading up to the attack. Guys, this is the same as the World Health Organization. They had a goal. They achieved the goal. Now they don't care. I don't know what the next goal is.
So really, so if I'm hearing you correctly, and I know I am because I have had the advantage of reading the Liberty series, folks, man, I'll tell you what, just do it. Just buy the Liberty series from Provost Institute because there's so much information packed in there. We have the benefit of a great mind like Dr. Richard Proctor. That information laid out for us to tell you exactly how we got here. I got to go back here in my head. UNESCO, the UN, began, UNESCO was part of the UN, a specialty agency of the United Nations, the UN educational, the hell is it? Does that stand
yes,
for?
It's that educational. It's an educational directive.
Okay, all right. And then we see these heritage sites, and the heritage sites. Yeah, okay, United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO.
That's the real name. Yes, big
right.
name.
And then these heritage
sites. Control our education.
So we don't even have control over the Statue of Liberty, where the Statue of Liberty sets. We don't have control over Monticello or Independence Hall or the Guggenheim.
You're reading them. You're reading them. That's right. It's a huge number. It's a huge number of things that are our history been taken over by the UN. Not with our government's permission. Okay. Our government said, okay, you can do that.
But in saving the Constitution, that's by treaty, right? Or by some sort of agreement, which is unconstitutional. Am I right?
Yes. It's also unconstitutional because the government doesn't have any control over any lands except those mentioned in paragraph 17 of Article 1, Section 8. Yeah, controls the land use.
Wow.
It's not there. They can't control that land. It's right there in the Constitution. Very clear. Should we read that one just for fun?
Sure.
Okay, I got it.
Okay.
You can look in the book there, make sure I'm reading it correctly.
Okay.
I'm on 1:8:17.
All right.
1:8:17. Here it is. I keep these things all numbered so I can keep track. Now, this is a very, very long paragraph, longer than the others. I don't know what page it's on there, but you can find it just by looking at Article 1:8. 57. Okay. Anyway.
67 in this book.
So, 67.
Right.
Now, what I'm going to read is precisely on page 67 because I do that. To exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles square as may, by cessation of particular states and the acceptance of Congress, become the seat of government of the United States. That establishes Washington, D.C. They have complete jurisdiction over those 10 square miles. Now, I don't believe that means 2.5 by 2.5 or something like that. It means 10 miles on a side. Okay. It has to be 10 miles on a side. It's not big enough. It isn't. So it's 100 square miles, but it's 10 miles square. You see the difference? Exclusive legislation over everything in that district. District of Columbia. That's what we call it. Right. Not exceeding the 10 miles. How do they get it? By the states giving them the authority to have that land. Maryland and Virginia, I believe. Those are the two states. Then they had to be accepted by Congress. Okay, and then it became the seat of government of the United States. That establishes the authority of the government over the land of D.C., Washington, D.C. Now the and comes in. We have another paragraph, another and. Those and words are important. There was a comma after states, and then says and. To exercise like authority. Aha, like authority. The same kind of authority that they can exercise over Washington, D.C. can be exercised in some other places. Let's find out what those other places are. Over all, a like authority over all places purchased by consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be. Well, now that's interesting. Purchased by the government from the state. I'm going to talk about the national park, Zion's National Park in Utah. They didn't purchase it. They took it over. What did I say? But they haven't got that authority. They exercise the authority over lands purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be. But now it defines what they can purchase it for. For erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. Uh-oh. I just discovered that they can't purchase it for Zion's National Park. They can't have Zion's National Park. I'm sorry. They can't have it. They can only purchase it from the state that agrees to it for erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. That means military, but not a standing army, because that's not authorized in 12.
Right.
It means militia, but militia is a part of the state. So the state can do it, okay? Needful buildings are the buildings that are needful to support forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards. Now, that's very clear. But the Supreme Court and the United States government has never read it. You don't have any idea what that says. It must be the last paragraph. Too far to go, 17. We're going to stop at, I don't know, which one? One? We can have taxes? Guys, it's not hard to read this book. It's not hard. And so, none of those heritage sites are authorized. First, they're not authorized to be government land to begin with. Next, they belong to the state. They do not. The government has no authority to say the UN can have any of them. We should invite the UN to depart. We should exactly invite the UN to depart off the land it's on.
Absolutely. I love this. There's no provision for national parks, national monuments, national forests, fish, game preserves, etc. They are not now nor ever have been authorized for the federal government. Thank you very much. Period.
End Looks like story. I'm going fishing.
There you go.
Yeah. Larry Finnegan. Was it Finnegan? Am I remembering right? Oh, please. Eric, yeah. Please help me with that name. Murdered
yes.
by the federal government because he was trying to keep his own right. Happened in Oregon.
Lavoie Finnegan. Lavoie Finnegan.
Yeah, Lavoie Finnegan. Right. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And
murdered.
And, yeah, murdered indeed.
That's where they'll go. That's what they're going to. That's the kind of stuff. And all he was trying to do, and the people with him, was peacefully, okay, peacefully, they never raised a gun in anger, peacefully say, we have rights to this land. It's our land, and it has been our land for decades, generations. And they killed him for doing that. They tried to do it to Bundy and company down in Nevada so they could give the land to China. They don't have any rights to give the land to China. have any rights to do any of that kind of stuff.
Right.
He stood up to it. Here came all the guns and the people from Montana and the militias, not the real militias, the people who call themselves militias, they came on down to Arizona to help him in his cause. It went away, but not before all kinds of cattle were slaughtered. Oh, it was terrible.
Yeah.
Bundy's lost lots of things, but they kept their land.
But at least they, people did something.
Yes, people did something. We stood up against the government guns.
Right, right.
And there were no guns shot in anger either, just to kill cattle.
Yeah, and that was not our side, if that's the correct terminology. My goodness.
You know, you're right. Our people, those militia, those people, Bundy's never shot the cattle.
Right.
It was the government that shot the cattle.
Right. And
so they destroyed property. They destroyed his property.
And that was a very malicious, calculated, malicious thing to do.
It was all being done by the senator from Arizona making some agreements with China so they could bring do some stuff with that territory.
Right, exactly. And there's China again. Whoops. You know, here it is again.
Yeah.
Incredible. Incredible. We only have a few minutes left, and I got to get this question in. Karen from Iowa, I believe it's Iowa, had asked me to ask you about mail-in voting. With this coronavirus, she writes, the governments, state governments are talking about use of mail-in ballots. Is this constitutional? Question mark. To you, sir. For voting.
Well, you know, it doesn't ever say how we vote. The Constitution doesn't say how we, it says we just do. It doesn't say how. So it's possible to do something like that. I vote mail-in all the time, every election. It's just easy for me. But I also register properly. I also vote properly. I also don't vote twice. I don't have dead people vote. If it's all done mail-in, And they also want to register daily, immediate registration as you vote. Those things are all being done to get the Democratic and the Republican Party in charge completely. North Carolina, North Dakota, I got an email from one of our listeners, and she asked the question, what about this amendment they're trying to pass here in North Dakota? Now, I'm going to write back to her in a significant response, but in detail, what it says is that there will be no party primary. All the primary votes will be everybody vote for them, and they'll be not designated by party unless you want to. And the top four people will go to the general election, and that's all that will go. Well, folks, what does that mean? That means that the Democrat and Republican Party have figured out a way to prevent anybody from voting for anybody but them. Now, that's really out of sight, isn't it?
Mm.
That particular amendment will destroy all other voices except the Democrat voice and the Republican voice. It is as far left field as you can get. It's a Hegelism deal to destroy the voting of our country, the voting rights of our people. Oh, this is terrible. And they're calling it an amendment, and people are going to say, oh, yes, we'll do that. No. People of North Dakota, stand up and shriek. Do not do that. Do not get that amendment. It will destroy your voting rights.
Okay. Now, a state amendment, right?
Yes, it's a state amendment.
Okay.
Right. All right. That's what I'm talking to the people in North Dakota. Stand up and shout. Do not let them do that. All of you guys, band together. Don't let that pass. You'll never get rid of it if it does, and you'll never have a vote, a proper vote again.
Man, okay. Well, let me, if you don't mind, ask you about electronic voting. You said there's no way, no one said anything how to vote, but electronic voting has come up as well. I'm not comfortable
electronic
with that.
Voting is the machines were built by a company in Spain.
Right.
We've had hackers get in. The hackers were probably the government, ours, and they hacked those machines and changed them. So you voted for one and somebody else got voted for. All the way through. There's no paper trail. There's no nothing. Just a data trail, which can be changed any second.
Yep.
It is completely wrong. It's not that case. Electronic voting, that case is nothing from the people that can be verified that they did. Therefore, it's really not your vote. It's somebody else controlling your vote. So that's not constitutional because it's not your vote.
Right, right. And that would be that would go for the same with voting from home by way of app or by the internet kind of thing.
Well, same thing. That'll be just as bad. All of that will be just as bad. Voting ballots in the mail, you know, you are voting. Your signature's there. Okay, right. I can't argue with it. I prefer, well, I like to do it, okay, because it's comfortable for me. But if a state says, no, we won't do that anymore, then that's their right. And I would go to the ballot then, like I always did before they allowed me to vote absent by mail. I voted absentee my whole Air Force career.
Okay. Which, and that's constitutional. I mean, that's allowed. That's permitted. So I have no problem with that.
So the mail is okay. The electronic machines, no. And North Dakota, you better not let that pass.
Okay. All right. You hear that, North Dakota? Hear it? I know we have a lot of listeners there, so I'm sure those were well-placed words. With a minute left, I'm going to give you the last word in the last minute here, Dr. Proctor. Go ahead.
Please, people of America, take over your country. Peacefully get back. Get it back. Do things. Form committees that will help peacefully return our country to you. Very, very important.
Wow. Thank you. And thank you for saying that. And please take heart. Take those words to heart. Dr. Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com, author of a number of books, including Saving the Constitution. Here it is. I got it right in the end. Folks, if you do nothing else today, purchase a copy of this book. Go to ProvisInstitute.com. You don't even have to mention my name or our name. Just buy it. And I guarantee you, you'll thank me later. Dr. Proctor, thank you so very much for being a part of the program today.
Thank you very much. We'll meet again next Wednesday and do more stuff.
Right on. I love you, brother. Thank you for all of your great work. All right. Folks, that's it for me today. Ah, my goodness, how quickly the program goes. excuse me. Just a couple of things in closing. Just real quick, a couple of things in closing. Tomorrow, Steve Quayle. SteveQuayle.com and a guest with him. Okay. Now I'm not going to tell you who it is because I don't know. I know it's one of the four people actually. I'll know in the morning. And that's Steve Quayle tomorrow, the entire program. That's Thursday. And we are going to have an announcement to those people who have donated to us for our legal defense fund. Okay, for that special time in Branson, since we won't be there, an announcement will be made tomorrow about what we're going to do. And I hope you can make it. It's going to be this Sunday, this coming Sunday. Steve Quayle, myself, and all of you who have been part of that legal defense fund, who are going to attend that dinner meeting thing. That's going to be this Sunday, but the announcement will be made tomorrow. And we're reaching out to each one of you. I want to thank you so much for your belief and trust in us. I want to thank Eric the Tech. What a great guy. My lovely wife who's in the office today. May God bless each and every one of you. See you tomorrow.